actually away today doing the polls for voting precinct, and he's doing that for his AP government class, which is run by our ASB coordinator, Mr. Johnson. We've had a pretty eventful last couple of weeks. Last time at our last meeting, we discussed we were in the middle of homecoming, and so I'll keep most of that brief as we've already kind of been over that. But we had a couple of really good dress-up days. We had sports on Monday, Tacky Tourist Day on Tuesday, Wacky Wednesday on Wednesday. We had the Decades on Thursday, and then on Friday we had Spirit. And we got a phenomenal turnout, and it really helped boost the atmosphere and kind of festivities of homecoming week. And then as for the actual homecoming game, we actually did something kind of unique this year, and we honored our alumni. And I'd like to thank our Dr. Prater for showing up and giving a little speech there. We played a really great game, and we honored our past principals as well as our alumni staff. We also recently had our Powder Puff game, which is basically girls' football, and we had over 120 girls participating in that. We got a lot of money raised from that, and we're donating a portion to the Hearst Cancer Research Center at French Hospital. And we had phenomenal sports kind of we had a phenomenal sports record recently. We had a cross-country meet where we took second at the county, and that was very impressive. We got two new records were set, as well as every single one of our girls broke their own personal records, and almost every boy. We also have girls golf and took first in league for the first time in history, as well as girls volleyball and tennis poised to take the CIF. They're doing very well, and they're going into that. And with that, I'd like to give away our treasurer, Joe Bravo, to give his report on FFA.
All right, thank you. FFA recently got back from Louisville, where they did very well in national competition. First place in the nation for novice parliamentary procedure. They also got first place. Yeah. The veterinary science team also took first place in the nation, with Amber Bierre getting first place individually in that category. And former student Benjamin Pearson took first place in prepared public speaking. And Mr. O'Connor would like to introduce the Ag teams at another meeting. And choir will be performing at Mission 6 o'clock, free Thursday.
We encourage you all to go.
Yeah.
It's a free concert. It's going to be great. And that's all we have.
Yep.
This
Thursday.
At the Mission downtown.
Thank you, Eli and Joel. You're welcome to stay for the entire meeting if you'd like, but if you have other obligations, you're free to leave.
Oh, we have a big econ test tomorrow, so we got to study for that.
Good for you. Thank you for your report. Okay, we do not have any correspondence listed at this time. We're going to open for public comment in just a moment here. I just want to read a couple of things here and ask for some cooperation. At this point in the agenda, the board welcomes comments on matters of district interest. The board will listen but cannot engage in discussion or take action on items not listed on the agenda due to the Brown Act. The total time for public comment is limited to 20 minutes at this time and 20 minutes for each agenda topic. Each speaker is limited to 3 minutes. The board may reduce individual or total time limits to accommodate large number of speakers or to accommodate the rest of the agenda. Generally, this section of the agenda is for individuals or representatives of a group to address the board on issues not listed on the agenda. Speakers who wish to discuss items on the agenda are requested to wait until that item comes before the board. However, comment may be given on agenda items at this time if it is not possible for the speaker to stay until the agenda item is heard by the board. Please indicate your need on your request to speak form. So we have a number of those there. And I just want to welcome everybody here tonight. It would help the efficacy of the meeting tonight if If people, rather than applaud speakers, would raise their hand if they're in agreement or solidarity with the speaker, it makes things move a little more quickly, and we can get to the other business at hand. Are we? Yes, we do have a 3-minute rule. We have how many speakers?
When I was 7 years old, my grandmother said, "You have 2 ears and 1 mouth. Be a good listener." And I've been listening for 2 years as president, now in my 3rd year. And I'm a little concerned that some more action hasn't taken place on some issues. Every year we've been told that wait till next year, things will get a little bit better. And it just hasn't happened. Things have piled up over and over. The pile of cans in the back of the room represents the number of hours, extra hours, that these teachers put in and other specialists put in per day on their job. And we've come to the point where we need to take some action on this. Every level is affected. We talk about elementary, but I've heard it from my math teachers at the high school. I've heard it from specialists all over the district about the workload that they are now encountering. They're even concerns about being a bad parent because they can't spend enough time with their family. We have young teachers that are afraid to even start families because they don't have the time to devote to a family. This is not about veteran teachers. Sometimes we hear that it's the veteran teachers. We have teachers that talk to me. I've talked to teachers a little less than 8 years, and they are really concerned about the amount of time they're putting into their job. I had a teacher that had to leave for grievance, and she had to be absent 2 days. She logged her time to prep for that absence, 25 and a half hours to prep for her elementary class so she could go to a funeral. I think that's just ridiculous that there's that much time involved to be absent. These people can't even afford to be absent. So all we're asking you tonight is to listen respectfully, and you always do, but it's time to take action. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Orton. Next, can we get maybe three?
I'm going to name three people, and if you could come up and kind of line up, it would help things move a little smoother. Kelly Youngman, Breanne Finn, and Karen Gallagher, and please forgive me if I mispronounce your name. So Kelly Youngman is first.
Thank you. Thanks. Hello. My name is Kelly Youngman, formerly Kelly Cook. I have been a teacher in this district for 8 years, and I am currently a 4th grade teacher at Los Ranchos. As we continue to learn and implement the new rigorous Common Core curriculum, we are feeling consistently overwhelmed and defeated. We appreciate the leadership and support that the district has provided. However, we are continuing to face major challenges on a daily basis that affect our students. The last 2 years, we have been given new curriculums, new assessments, new report cards, new committees, new standards, new technologies, new methodologies, and new meetings. That's a lot of new. Rather than take the time to master portions of the curriculum, we continue to pile on not fully developed programs. Our students are overwhelmed, and they're exhibiting more and more disruptive behaviors. Our parents are frustrated and confused, and they're consuming teacher hours to discuss how they can help make all of these changes accessible to their little ones. We understand that we've been given more prep time for PE this year, but it is only an additional 10 minutes for me for upper grade. This is not nearly enough time to accommodate the very new demands of the workload. Also, with this rigorous workshop model approach, the combination classes absolutely do not work at all. And high class sizes, individualized and small group teaching, to make small group teaching nearly impossible. I have 30 students and I have 34 for my mathematics pilot program. I agree that the Common Core curriculum is strong, and I agree that it will prepare our students for the brighter future. But teachers need more uninterrupted time devoted to learning, understanding, and mastering not just one, but five subjects. And we're taking that on to our little kids and trying to make it accessible to them. We need a higher adult-to-student ratio. This could mean hiring full-time counselors or instructional aides to address individual student needs so that the rest of our class can progress. If new science curriculum is coming, a specialist needs to be brought in to implement this.
You have 30 seconds more, please.
Thank you. It is not realistic to change everything we do and how we teach it and to not change the working conditions to make it actually possible. I know that over time, and the people behind me know, that things will get easier and there's always going to be challenges. However, when you continue to feel that the light at the end of the tunnel is not visible, it becomes harder to believe that the tomorrow will be easier. I know that I am not alone in feeling this. Many days feeling overwhelmed, feeling defeated, and feeling bad tired. I want to feel that I can someday master my position as a teacher, but I see my partner, who has been teaching for 28 years, with the same confusion and exhaustion, and quite frankly, this concerns me as a new teacher. I know this is a new and challenging time for all of us, but please listen to our concerns. We all want what's best for our students, but we feel as if right now we are not able to give them the best of ourselves. We are all very much on the same team, and we want to do this together, but we need more time, we need more support, and we need understanding to do this amazing work effectively. I hope we can work together and get back to that good tired that we are all striving for. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Karen Gallagher, and I'm also a teacher at Los Ranchos, and I'm just here to speak in behalf of our young teachers who are so excited to start in our district, just like I was, and I still am. And sometimes the older senior teachers feel less respected these days, and I'm not sure why that's happened. But I'm just as excited, and we all are, with our new curriculum, and very appreciative, really, of all of the time that has been spent on getting our curriculum, the new math, the new writing, the new reading. It's all fabulous. It really is. The kids love it. We love it. But it's just been the pace of it that's hit. And I know everybody has been apologetic. But we just, on top of that, with the evaluation system that's in place, I feel like we haven't had time to feel like we are masters of our classroom anymore. And then we're being evaluated on that, and we're falling short. So I'd like that to be looked into. And then the only thing I could think of as a possible solution is I feel like we need to become single subject teachers at the elementary level, because the breadth of the programs and the depth of the materials and the time it takes to prepare, I think, is going that direction with Common Core. So I would just like that to be in consideration. And also another thought was, it just seems like such a waste when teachers are ready to retire, but they really don't want to leave education, that we could maybe look at our old model of having a minimum 2 years or 1 year at the end with benefits where, you know, we're half time but we're still on campus and actually physically doing the preparation and the mentoring with the young teachers, because I feel like they're coming in with no training. Coming from Cal Poly isn't really enough training to get into these programs, and I feel really guilty that I can't help them more. So that's just another thought of how we could help the workload. And also not just the elementary teachers in the classroom, but I'm really concerned for the health of our specialists. So I'd really hope you can take a closer look at the number of students that the counselors at the high school are responsible for, that our RSP teachers are responsible for. They might need some clerical assistance added, because they spend most of their time with reports that are required and not really working with the students. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.
Next, I have Susan Pacheco, Laura Kirshner, and Nancy Thorne. You could step forward.
Thank you. Dr. Prater and the board members, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here. Before I begin, I would like to thank you, the board members, for your service on our school board. My father serves 19 years on a high school board, so I appreciate and understand the commitment, time, and dedication that you give to this district and to our children. Thank you. My name is Susan Ortega Pacheco. I'm a second grade teacher at Hawthorne Elementary. I'm speaking for myself and for my colleagues, many of whom are reluctant to speak as they wish to avoid any possible retribution. We are a group you don't normally see at board meetings. We are not usually outspoken. We are not activists. We focus on doing our job, educating our students. However, we are deeply concerned about the direction of education in this district and believe that it is now time to stand up and speak up. None of us are against change. I repeat, none of us are against change. And we recognize it can be very difficult to manage and to implement. However, the priority seems to be data, assessment, deadlines. Education seems to have taken a back seat, especially in the elementary grades, says in the next unit. At the end of the school year, I want my second grade students to remember more than 33 math assessments. I want them to remember that in second grade, we read, we explored, we discovered, we experimented and created, we played, we sang, we pretended, and we loved school. And most importantly, I want them to be excited to return for more. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. You all know how much I love this school district. My name is Laura Kirshner, and I'm a resource specialist at Hawthorne School. I would first like to thank the board and the superintendent for providing this opportunity to communicate and collaborate. I also want to let you know that the administration at Hawthorne has made great efforts to help relieve the workload of the teachers there. I'm excited about the Common Core standards. I'm thrilled that our students in San Luis Coastal will learn how to be deeper thinkers and problem solvers. I'm ecstatic that our children are learning how to be mathematicians, readers, and writers. At Hawthorne School, I'm in classrooms from preschool to sixth grade, where teachers are creating communities of learners. As we start this new school year, I've been increasingly worried that elementary teachers and specialists may have too much on their plates. I wonder if we have taken on too much and need to reflect and regroup. Writer's Workshop is powerful. Comprehensive literacy is the best way to teach children to read. I'm convinced of that. Our new math program, Bridges, is exciting and designed to engage and teach all levels and types of learners. Standards-based report cards report much more accurate information, and accurate data really does inform our instruction. I'm concerned about a few things: the teacher workload, real instructional time, and implementing these new systems and programs with fidelity. And of course, what's good for kids? Teachers always take work home and come into the classroom after hours. This school year, there are too many teachers still planning and preparing at 6 p.m. or Saturday evening. We need to collect data so that we are teaching kids what they need to learn. But are we testing more than we are teaching? I am concerned that we do not have the time for quality instruction. The programs and systems we are learning and implementing are the best of the best. But are we able to be the best of the best for our students? Are there enough hours in the day to fully implement each program? Again, I'm concerned that we are risking the social-emotional well-being of our children, precious instructional time, and the fidelity of our new systems and programs with the added workload of data collection, assessment, and preparation. Can I finish? As a special education teacher, I believe in the power of using assessment to inform instruction and preparing rich teaching activities to engage children. But we are having kids melt down because they are being tested excessively. Teachers are taking piles of tests home to score, and children are losing valuable instructional time. I have much respect for the hard work of the administration, board, staff, parents, and children of San Luis Coastal. Let's take a deep breath and regroup.
Thank you.
My name is Nancy Thorne. I'm a fourth grade teacher at Hawthorne Elementary School. I'd like to read you a poem by Langston Hughes. Hold fast to dreams, for if dreams die, life is a broken winged bird that cannot fly. Hold fast to dreams, for when dreams go, life is a barren field frozen with snow. At the start of every school year, my students begin a collection of poems for a poetry booklet. This is the first poem they receive. Many students have it memorized already. We read it, and then I tell them the story of my journey to become a teacher, to become their teacher. It was not an easy one. I am the daughter of a truck driver, and although both parents did their best, I came from what today might be considered a disadvantaged home. My father did not graduate high school, and college was not a given in our household. However, I felt no matter how long I stay after school or how much work I bring home every evening and weekend, I'm still only one person. I'm outnumbered 27-1. There was a time when 27 students would have been considered a small class. Not anymore. With the workshop model in all core curricular areas, I can't conference and teach that many students with so many needs effectively. Oh, don't get me wrong, I'll try. I'll never stop trying. But deep down, I know that I'm just not enough. I'm not enough when I want to read and conference with each of my students on a regular basis. I'm not enough when I finally do get to read with each student, and I know what they need. But I'm not at all certain I can get to each of them, even in small groups, because there are 26 other students with different needs, and I want to make time for them also. I'm not enough when I care deeply and passionately about each child's academic and social well-being, but I've neglected my own. I have spent too many late evenings planning the writing lesson, prepping the math pilot, evaluating student work, forming groups, and preparing for their new report card. Please help me be enough for the children I'm so privileged to teach. Help me make a difference in their lives and a lasting impact on them and their precious futures that are filled with dreams also. Please eliminate combination classes and lower class sizes for all of us. I think that would make a huge, huge difference for us. Thank you.
Thank you. I want to point out that on the podium there's a series of lights there. So when that light starts to flash yellow, what is it? We have about 30 minutes or 30 seconds to wrap up. Who do we have now?
Okay, next three people. I have Bridget Reddy, Susan Renard, Fatima Sella, and then I'm going to read the fourth because that would be the last speaker, is Kathy Bonnet. Thank you.
Thank you. I should be 2 minutes and 41 seconds. Good evening. I come before you tonight with the hope of keeping you informed on what is going on in the classroom from the perspective of a teacher who is proud of her profession and who embraces the modernization of our teaching, our techniques, and our curriculum. Like my fellow educators, I want to meet and serve the needs of the 21st century student. Over the course of the last few years, I have found myself spending countless hours in the evenings and on weekends seeking to keep up with implementing the district's new goals and the additional responsibilities of bringing the Common Core curriculum into the classroom. At Bishop's Peak, we conducted an informal survey and discovered that on an average, we are spending an additional 15 and a half hours per week
per teacher on implementing the district's programs. The fact that this has been going on for over a year should establish that we're not here as whiners. Those of us who have volunteered to implement the Bridges math program did not include that additional time commitment within the 15 and a half hours I've just described. While we recognize the need for changes, we don't feel that our efforts are being acknowledged. 15 and a half hours per week equates to 3.1 additional hours each workday. Based upon a 180-day school year, that is nearly 14 weeks of additional time we've each spent in moving this district's goals and our children's education forward, without recognition and without compensation. In addition to this teacher increased workload at our non-Title I schools, we face these challenges without the instructional aides and school counselors that this district historically and successfully provided. Our class size continues to create concerns. We're faced with new goals and curriculum, and yet we have been denied the resources required to make these challenges happen. Our ever-changing landscape demands additional individual attention, yet at Bishop's Peak alone, the availability of on-site school-based student counselors has been reduced approximately 60%. I'm proud of my profession and each of my fellow educators. Over the course of the last 2 years, we have successfully engaged the challenges presented by the district's goals and commenced the implementation of the Common Core curriculum. While we embrace these goals and changes, we ask for more recognition than a pat on the head. We require your support, an appropriate level of staffing, and we feel we deserve to be recognized and fairly compensated for meeting these challenges. Thank you so very much.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Hi. My name is Susie Renard. I'm the speech pathologist at Monarch Grove. I've worked at Monarch Grove for the last 4 years. Tonight I am speaking on behalf of the general ed teachers and the special ed team at our school. After I spent some time speaking with the teachers at Monarch Grove, I can see that what they're doing is extremely time and labor intensive in terms of lesson and activity preparation.
Hi, my name is Fatima Sala. I'm from Morro Bay High School. As I read Dr. Prater's letter in response to the Hawthorne primary teachers, I couldn't help but think back to a kickoff speech that he gave in 2013. He asked us what our story was. He recounted a time working at his family business, a point in his life where he was tired, and no matter how hard he tried and tried, the end result was always exhaustion. He told us, and I quote, "I was the kind of tired that no amount of rest could ever fix. I felt as if my soul was dying." It wasn't until Dr. Prater found teaching that he realized what good tired really was. Good tired is the tired you feel when you're doing a job that has meaning and matters to other people. It matters on a larger scale. He inspired me with his words about the potential to shape the future of children. It instilled in me a sense of pride at the fact that I was a new educator. Still, I reflect back now, and I wonder whether or not his words did me justice. Because I am a teacher, because I matter, am I never allowed to be bad tired? After I spent 10 hours on a Sunday making a flip lecture, editing my website, researching my advanced placement classes lectures, am I not allowed to be bad tired? To tell me that the fact that my profession matters also robs me of my ability to be tired fills me with guilt. And after listening to the others speak, I'm having the same issue of hearing after they have hours of prepping report cards, grading math assessments, attending unpaid trainings, are they also not allowed to feel tired without feeling guilty? I did the tally for this week. I worked 16 hours roughly, and with the math, 16 hours at my hourly rate would be $528 this week. I don't want $528. It's not a question of salary. It's not a question contrary to the response of the number of applicants who would like to work in this district, or the wrong changes or right changes. I like to think of myself as somebody on the edge. I flip my lectures, I advance using technology in my classroom, I embrace it. It's not a question of being compensated, it's a question of quality of life. My SLCTA colleagues have attempted to reach out. We want the innovation, we want the change, we want to lead the county. We just don't want, as Dr. Prater put it, to feel like our souls are dying because we are so exhausted. What is good for teachers is also good for students. Teachers are no longer good tired, and the sooner that this is realized, the sooner we can refocus on our students and our path forward. As Dr. Prater stated in his response, our children deserve the very best we can give them. Right now, it's very hard. Tomorrow, it will be easier. We all love teaching. We all want to do our best. It's one sentence left. Nevertheless, I refuse to admit that me being tired makes me a bad teacher. Thank you.
Thank you. We have another request.
Kathy Bonnet.
Hi, my name's Kathy Bonnet, and I have to admit I'm almost ashamed to come before you with what I was going to be talking about. And if I hadn't have put my name in, I probably wouldn't be talking, because what I wanted to talk about was IEP meetings that are held past the duty day. I have some information to give the school board about the time that's spent in IEP meetings, but I'd briefly like to tell you a little story. And please listen to that with the first thing I said, that I'm almost ashamed to be bringing this up. It was 3 years ago. I was in an IEP meeting, started at 2:45, ended at 5. I was the only service provider. There were two people from the school district, two advocates, three parents, me and the classroom teacher, and the principal. Down the hallway, there was an in-service. It was led by our wonderful Darla Batistic, how you say her name, and everybody that attended that was paid. In my room, you can see there's glass that goes into the hallway, and my colleagues walked by and they looked at me with sympathy because they knew what I was going through. They went into the meeting with Darla. They learned about, I think it was Data Director, something I needed to learn about. I kept on going with my IEP meeting. I was desperately trying to advocate for my student. I was desperately trying to communicate to the parents, and I was desperately trying not to make a mistake that would cost this district a lot of money. I kept on going. 5 o'clock came. All my colleagues walked by. They're laughing. They look at me with sympathy as I walked by. I think we should get paid to go and lead a stressful IEP meeting in front of parents and advocates. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing that there's no more requests to speak, I am going to close the public comment. You're welcome to stay for the rest of the board meeting. Thank you for your attendance. Okay, we are now item 5.01, the budget and business update. You want to take a few minutes to give them a chance to...
Sure.
Maybe they should hear it. Maybe they should hear the budget business update.
You're on, Mr. Pinkerton,
I think really that there's not much to report today. Mr. Houghton is going to talk to you a little bit about our conservation plan, kind of energy measures to save funds and kind of move forward with the district. So I'm going to save some of it for that time. I think we're all interested to see what holds tonight with the election in terms of our public superintendent of instruction and how that goes and what happens kind of in our state with elections. And, of course, I think we've all been nervous about Measure D and what's going to happen tonight. So we're fingers crossed that that will be something that will really help our students and our teachers at all of our school sites.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. Just some nonverbal communication here. All right. All right, we're at item 5.02, Educational Services Update. Oh, I'm sorry, we're going to do the, that's coming later in the agenda, correct, Mr. Pinkerton, about the conservations? And,
yeah.
Okay. All right, so Educational Services Update, Redbird.
Yeah, in 1990, it's a while ago, Stanford University and Redbird Advanced Learning founded the Education Program for Gifted Youth, otherwise known as EPGY. This was a software program which offered multimedia, computer-based, distant learning courses in a variety of subject areas. In its most typical use, a school or a parent, who, often the case, would purchase a course, plug their child in, and then let the individualized learning take place. Very popular in the homeschool movement. In 2013, so fast forward 23 years, Stanford University selected Redbird Advanced Learning again. And they're actually very connected, Redbird, Stanford Carnegie, it's a very connected company. They're both private institutions. To co-develop the next generation of its adaptive digital curriculum and blended learning implementation programs. Not this time with just a focus on advanced standalone classes for bright kids, but in Common Core aligned personalized learning for all students. Because this was a focus of both our Accelerated Learning Committee that met last year and the year before, and as part of our LCAP plan, we have entered into a partnership with Stanford and Redbird to try out this new program. We are particularly interested in how we can use this to personalize learning in the area of mathematics. Redbird will work with district and school leadership in order to assess, design, and implement a program that will match our overall vision, priorities, and instructional model. Ideally, depending on how it all works, one can imagine scenarios where this would be helpful to teachers and students. For example, if a student is struggling with a particular math concept, through diagnostic tools and an individualized program, that child can plug into an individual course on any type of device as part of their regular math class in order to get remediation. Secondly, in our workshop model, which we've heard about, Redbird could become an actual station, a place where a group of all students could, as they're rotating through their through the workshop model, plug into a headset, do individual work that is tailored to their level. A lot of that work is being done at Los Osos Middle School in mathematics, actually, right now. Another possibility that student who is already ahead of their conceptual understanding could be given the Redbird program to enrich their curriculum. Accelerated students could work on STEM projects utilizing the software. Last, when they were here, we were able to see a fourth grade unit where students who had already mastered concepts in math were actually could actually kind of build and design a satellite using the computer, calculating how big the solar panels would need to be to provide energy, how big the other aspects of the satellite would need to be. So it would be the first to pilot the program, and these teachers are asking for it, and they are hungry for it. So we will also be doing some pilots in after-school programs at all of our schools. As with everything we have done, we will be dependent on teacher input, teacher readiness, and adequate professional development. But this train of using technology to individualize instruction has left the station, and as we have indicated in our LCAP plan, we are moving forward. So we're excited about this new partnership with Stanford and with the Redbird Advanced Learning Company, and because we think it's going to best support our students and staff. Happy to answer any questions, and we also have people here that can also answer questions if you have any.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
Very exciting. Love this. And I'm just curious where the model technology classrooms are that you have in mind.
At every one of our school sites has a model technology classroom. This is a kindergarten through seventh grade program, so it would be in those classrooms initially, but it is at every school site, mm-hmm. Elementary and middle school.
I have a question in terms of its implementation and the amount of time and for, in this case, a teacher to orient a student to the program and for the teacher themselves to be proficient enough in directing the student.
Yeah, that's what the Redbird folks are out right now doing, is looking at not only our kind of infrastructure, technology, and how it's used, but also our instructional model and determining how best to infuse that. My understanding is it's not the type of thing where you wanted to say to a teacher, hey, here's a computer and this program, plug in and do your kids, because there's a lot to it. So what we want to do is be careful and deliberate. I don't expect to see a lot of a lot of use of it necessarily this year, because I think what we want to do is just kind of infuse it into these places, let some of our teachers who are very excited about using this stuff figure out how best to use it before we move forward next year. Am I correct in that, Kim? Or kind of that's kind of our game plan, is to be deliberate and slow. But it will take professional development to utilize the program.
So is it safe to say that you're looking for eventually a cadre of teachers that will use this program and then perhaps influence others?
Yeah,
as,
and I think
as
that
a means of
sure,
of disseminating it to all teachers, or are we just saying a few will do it and then suddenly everyone's going to embrace it?
We'll see. It'll depend, because what I think we have to recognize is that blended learning environments where we have teachers who provide direct instruction and indirect instruction have to also utilize technology efficiently. And this is a technology tool among many that we are going to have to be putting into our curriculum.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Robinette. Dr. Prater.
I just want to add something. In light of what we heard today, tonight, I think the key for me is we pilot this tool. And I think if it's as successful as I hope it to be, people will want it. And as opposed to us saying this is what you need to do, the goal would be, can we have more licenses? Can we add 3 classrooms next year to do that, because we're excited about it? Allow it to grow organically from each school site, from within those model classrooms. That would be the ideal scenario. We're struggling across the district with defining what our after-school programs look like for intervention and enrichment. This could be an ideal tool for that. So I don't want to shy away from being innovative or looking for ways that we can make teachers' lives better. And I think this could be one of those things, especially within our instructional model. But we're going to let Redbird prove to us that it is, in fact, something of quality and interest to us.
Thank you, Dr. Prater. Are there any other questions from the board? Okay. All right, seeing none, we'll move on. Okay. Well, we can open this also to public comment. Is there any questions from the public or comments?
I'm Rose Fowler, the school counselor at Del Mar and Monarch Grove Elementary. My question is, did you hear us? We have 9 new programs. This may be a fabulous program, but my teachers cannot take on another thing. They are at the breaking point. So my question again is, did you hear us? We can't do any more. Voluntarily or involuntarily, we can't do any more. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we are moving to item 6.01, the SEIU reopener proposal. Is there anyone from... One, we'll close the public hearing. Now we'll go to item 7.01, district conservation plan.
So as part of the board goals, in terms of looking at our budget and financing and trying to save any way that we can in terms of our budget and moving forward, and hopefully after tonight, this will be also a conversation when it comes to our facility upgrades as well, and that is energy consumption and the cost of utilities. So I thought no better way to kind of get this started and kind of introduce some of these items to the board than to kind of look at the big rocks. And so Dave Houghton is here tonight from Avila Partners. He is basically doing our Prop 39 energy audit, as well as kind of helping us in terms of how we move and how we utilize those funds. So I'm going to have Dave kind of talk about that and what he found in looking at our data, and then I'll talk a little bit about next steps.
Thanks very much. I'm Dave Houghton. I'm a local building systems engineer, and I'm your consultant for Proposition 39. Prop 39 is a state...
And he just watched his daughter play volleyball at Slo High.
Oh,
right.
Well, actually, my daughter is a freshman at Slo High. My other daughter is a Sevy at Laguna, and I can report that the Slo High freshman girls basketball team crushed Mission tonight. So, thanks very much, Ryan. So Proposition 39 is a state program that allocates money to school districts throughout the state for the express purpose of improving their energy performance. And it's based on attendance, so you guys get $318,000 per year for the next 5 years, and I'm here to help you get that and then spend it as wisely as possible. So that's the basic mission here. The first step in that is what we call benchmarking, and I think that in your language you might call it assessment. Of what's going on with the energy use. And I'm just going to give the presentation that I gave to Ryan and to Anthony Palazzo a few weeks ago. It's about 6 or 7 PowerPoint slides. It won't take long. We don't need to spend much time on this, but the basic idea is we just look at how much energy is being used at each school on a per square foot and a dollars per square foot basis, and we look at where the energy is going and who's doing well and who's not doing so well. This is the overall picture, and the ranking there, the units on the vertical scale are kBTUs per square foot per year. That might seem like it's hieroglyphics, but it's really just a measure of all energy use put into one kind of energy, the kBTU. It's 1,000 BTUs, and this is what's used nationwide as a standard for comparing how much energy a building uses.
I hate to interrupt, but that's both for gas
it's
and
gas
electric?
Gas and electric,
okay,
yes.
Thanks.
And the next slide will break that down for us. So,
excuse me, but what is SLCY?
These are all abbreviations for the schools in the district. So,
I recognized everyone but that one, and I struggled for hours trying to figure it out.
Yeah, Corporate Yard, and then the last one's Morro Bay Corporate Yard. So this is the same graph broken down by gas and electric, and what it shows you is that this is, again, in kBTUs per square foot per year. So the axis goes from 0 to 60, and just for comparison, the national average is right around 50. We also have access to data from the Los Angeles area schools where similar efforts are underway, and they're usually in the 40 to 60. Sometimes they're over 100 kBTUs per square foot per year. So we're doing pretty good. The biggest difference that you'll see here, the high school, the secondary schools use the most energy by far. They have athletic facilities and they've got all that stuff. So, and one of the biggest determinants that we found too is whether or not schools have air conditioning. That's something that really drives it up. So, we're blessed in this climate and climate zone 5, and we have a lot of free cooling here. So. The other thing I'll point out to you here is that the 4 schools with solar electric, that's the green bars in the middle, and this is showing energy units, and we'll have another one that shows dollars. But right now those schools are making about half of their electricity with the solar systems. And this data here is for the 2013-2014 school year. Okay, we can go to the next. So this is the energy cost in absolute terms. San Luis High School is by far the biggest one. However, that includes this building that we're in here as well as the Lizzie Street campus. And so that gets split up. And so it's not quite fair to be comparing that. But that's why that bar is so high. The total energy bill for all, this is just energy for the entire district, is just under $1 million per year. And if you add in the water cost, which we'll take a look at in a second, it goes to about 1.7. Let's go back one. I just wanted to say one more thing, that the elementary schools are the schools that tail out here towards the end, and so they're relatively small. We're going to be focusing most of our efforts on the secondary schools, but we will be auditing all the schools and looking for opportunities. A little bit of aberration, that's why the Morro Bay High School number is kind of low. And also there's been some other issues with the solar. As you know, one of the systems went down, and they took all of them down and replaced all the inverters. That's all complete. All that work's been done now, and it's all back online.
Jim?
I'm sorry, my mind wandered for a moment, I think. What was your explanation for why Morrowbie High School's number was so low?
There is a, I don't know how much time you want to spend on this, but there's a net metering process that PG&E uses, and they do an annual true-up. So when you're generating electricity, the net meter is not always reporting the actual use, and then what happens at the end of the year, which that particular bill wasn't included in this graph, then a big bill comes along. And we were just talking about this, Ryan, on why there's all of a sudden some big bills. So that's just kind of an aberration in the way that this was reported.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Should we move on? Okay. So the next step, and this is my last slide, is the process includes what's called an energy expenditure plan that gets submitted to the state. And we've submitted the first one. It's for the fiscal year 2013 to 2014, which ended at the end of August. And it was approved by the state. And it's going to fund the retrofit of all six gyms in the four secondary schools. All of the gym lighting is going to be retrofitted with high efficiency and much better quality LED light fixtures. And so we have $168,000 that's on the way to your district from the state, and we expect to get $32,000 from PG&E as a rebate for that measure.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Mr. Unger.
So going back to the utility cost by source, that second to the last page, if we look at the schools that have the solar panels, we get a combination of electric from the grid and electric from the solar. So I just want to make sure I understand this. For example, at San Luis High School, the bar for total electric cost goes to $200,000, right?
So, do you want to talk about that? You want me to?
Okay. Well,
okay. We can both do it. So there's kind of a weird thing that happened that Dave kind of touched base on.
Right.
So,
I understand.
So right now, what happens is they don't charge us for
right.
our full electrical bill.
I understand that because I've got solar panels on my roof.
And then all of a sudden, in March, we get this
right.
huge
you get the true-up bill.
Exactly. That goes only to Los Osos Middle School's bill.
Right.
And then the same thing happens. The same thing happens
right.
in San Luis.
Right.
So we get the San Luis City bill all gets trued up at slow high in terms of the slow high bill. So that's why this data is a little... You know, though it's there, it's a little
right.
off in that it's representing more than just San Luis Obispo High School.
Right.
It could be Laguna as well and other places.
Sure, but that wasn't my question.
Sorry.
For example, and I'm looking at this electricity usage in terms of the $200,000 because that's what I'm seeing here, and I'm representing the $200,000, the red bar and the green portion of the bar as the total amount of electricity used in the year, correct? Which equates to approximately $200,000 without that true up yet, right? That green, if we were not generating electricity through the solar panels, which is the green, I'm assuming then that red bar would go at least up to the 200,000 and hopefully higher than that because the grid electricity is more expensive than the solar electricity. Is that true?
So right now the grid rate is about 18 cents, and the rates are complicated, and they're getting more complicated because they're going to start moving to a time of use rate. But what we can tell you is that the average is around 18 cents per kilowatt hour for grid
okay.
electricity, and you have a contracted price for the solar electricity, which is 18.8.
Okay.
So you're paying a little bit more right now
okay.
for the solar electricity. That's a guaranteed flat rate for whatever the term of that contract
right.
is.
And so how many years is that?
It was
20 years.
So
nobody expects the utility rates to be flat for that time, but that's
right.
that's part
right.
of the calculation.
We're right. expecting a 6% jump PG&E rates next year versus ours has a set.
Right.
That was the benefit of doing solar, I think the solar panel, was that they cap the amount that
right.
your bill can go up each month versus PG&E. You never know. It could... 6-8% each year. I mean, you just don't know.
Exactly.
So they are moving to a new true-up system in terms of like we talked about. So instead of doing this one-time payment in March where you kind of true up your bill, we are going to start being charged monthly. So that'll be
right.
kind of a different reflection in terms of our bills and charting it.
Right.
So they're going to start doing that, and then they're also going to start doing a time of day charge.
Right.
So they're moving to a different system where you have peak times of day.
Mistake that our solar project was an error is wrong.
Fair enough.
Mr. Buckman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I'm hoping in, and maybe your calculations will do that and we can and maybe get some numbers soon, was to see not only this, but if we switch from a 60-watt bulb to an LED that puts out that amount, savings would be. And so I'm going to try and use the difference. What would the difference be in the KBTU FTTY?
KBTU is per square foot per year.
Okay, yeah. But so
will it show up?
So that's part of the Prop 39 audit.
Right.
So when we put these projects forward, we have to prove a certain amount. Is it 2%? What's the percentage?
There's a savings to investment ratio test of 1.05. It's about a 9 or 10 year payback.
Okay, so
For example, these LED lights that we're looking at in the gym, they're going to cost about $1,000 each to put in, and they're going to save about $100 each per year.
Okay,
for each fixture.
Okay, so I don't know if it's possible, and maybe that's in a report that you already sent the state, but can you provide us with those numbers of savings as well?
So for me, like tonight, this is just a start. This is a beginning of a long conversation, I think, for the board.
Okay.
So it was really interesting for us. I mean, I just wanted to start with big rocks. These are our four big, huge rocks, right? Electric, solar electric, water, and gas. And so to just kind of, I mean, even just to know, what do we spend? How much are we using? I mean, we're basically, the whole way that we kind of charted all this data and pulled it all together, I'm starting all over. Because we were doing it a way that necessarily, the data wasn't necessarily what we really needed to look at. So we've made a whole new kind of spreadsheet and allocation trying to figure out how much that per unit cost is and those types of things. So we're kind of starting with that, getting that ball rolling. And I think there's going to be a lot more conversation about, as I said, with our facilities moving forward.
Right.
What can we do? What types of conservation measures can we implement as we begin with our facilities? And how is that going to help us with these overall costs, I think, is going to be something that's going to be huge ongoing for us. And the environmental friendly aspect of it and, you know, all of those great things that, you know, for me, I think we should do a better job of talking to the public about our solars panels and the effect that they have on the economy and how they're going to help us in the future and doing those types of things. So this was, you know, with Dave's information, taking our old data, this is kind of what we could pull together from it. But I want to have kind of a better system moving forward and then really give you more kind of regular updates about where we're at conservation. And then, you know, fuel costs and trash and recycling and I mean, we can go on and on, but I wanted to start with these big rocks today.
So let me, for me, it would be helpful as we move forward for the dollar investment or the project that we're doing, could we get to some conclusion that says, oh, and by the way, this saved 42 cents or 42,000.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did write down waste management as well because I don't think that's probably your expertise.
No.
Okay, and so maybe we should be getting integrated waste management involved in this as well.
And again, I wanted to start with these kind of big rocks.
As it's great.
We have some major things that we've done, right? So putting the 2 meters at our San Luis City Schools, so we're not being charged sewer charges for our water use on fields.
Yeah,
I mean that's going to affect these charts and the water bills that you see there dramatically.
Yeah.
So those are, really key things that we'll begin to see. So our water bills, our water was going through 1 meter previously. So and we pay for the amount of water that goes through the use of the meter. We pay a sewer charge. So we were paying a sewer charge on our irrigation of our fields. So now, by having 2 meters, one for the irrigation for the fields, one for our buildings, we only have to pay the sewer charge for the meter that goes to our buildings.
So just in conclusion, I mean, I've been praying for this
coming.
For, quite a while, so I'm really excited to see this coming.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. I'm looking at utility cost by source. Don't know what page I'm on. And my focus, I guess, is on the water use. At Slow High, which I know would incorporate toilets and lavies and irrigation and everything else up here at the district office as well in the adult school. But it seems that...
They do.
So is that the answer for Morro Bay High School?
Partly, I would say. There's also, we have like five different water companies that we use throughout, in terms of the schools. So Los Ranchos is on Golden State Water. I mean, so we have these different companies, too, that tie into it. So that's part of the new spreadsheet that I'm putting together, which is by school site, by use, by amount, to really chart this a lot better, I think, so that I have better data to share with you. Realize all of the San Luis schools. I mean, look at how remarkable, how huge our water bills are at our elementary sites here in town,
right,
especially. So a lot of that is because of you'll remember last year the city council voted to change the sewer rate system in terms of the district and moving to the 2 meters. So I would expect that that's going to have a dramatic impact on those numbers as we move forward into next year. Because this is using data, last year's data.
Mr. Pinkerton, looking at this chart, regardless of if it's Golden State or CSA 9A or whoever it is, that is the purveyor, if I look at this chart, I can still...
I don't think it's use. I think it's just cost.
There's the... I don't know which companies are servicing the school.
Morro Bay has a well.
Yeah, I just took a quick look at the units, and the unit costs appear to be different because they're not. I don't know if they're. Water companies sometimes do acre feet, sometimes they do 100,000 gallons, so I'm not sure if the units. From looking at it right now, I can't compare the units.
So I can't really look at this chart and say, hey,
well, this is the dollars
Laguna Middle School is using a lot more water than Los Osos Middle School.
No, I don't think you can say that necessarily. We should look at the rates and get you better numbers.
Yeah, that's a chart I would be interested in seeing, is the amount that we're using, because I know we cut back, at least on the coastal schools in Los Osos.
Agreed.
When we lost our special tiered rate, and even though those schools are function as de facto parks, really, the turf is, we've had to be conservative. We're responding to a drought situation and a money situation. So I would love to see the volume of water used at the various schools, not today, not tomorrow, but when you can make it available.
Sure. When it starts.
Lambs is one of those sites where it's almost, in terms of just sheer acreage and field irrigation, almost identical to Morro Bay High School and almost to San Luis High. It's people don't realize it, but it's a huge irrigation load on our district. There's almost as many students at Laguna Middle School as there are at Morro Bay High School. Or actually, there may even be more.
There may be more, I think.
But so, just looking at it that way, it's almost similar to a high school campus, if you will. The other thing out there is we have had some irrigation issues on that campus in the last few years. Underground pipe leaks, fairly significant. So
at Laguna, you're speaking
at Laguna, yeah. So, and those were just about right after I came on board within the district. It was trial by fire or water, as they say. So again, I don't think that's thrown this off significantly, but there has been, we have been finding some systemic issues out there at that site. And so we've been addressing those over the last few months at Laguna in particular. Now, just of note, Laguna is one of our only sites, it is our only site on recycled water for irrigation. Not that that's an excuse to waste it, but to just kind of alleviate some of the concern, it is a recycled water site.
And at some point in time, when the sewer, the Los Osos sewer comes online, Los Osos Middle School will be taking tertiary treated water.
Loams, Baywood, and Monarch Grove are all three slated to get that. We're now working with the county to get that piping plan put in place. But what they've said is it's still 2 to 3 years out because they need to generate enough water into the
to their coffers, if you will, that they can then deliver to us. So they're still thinking it's almost 2 to 3 years out.
The fact that we agreed to be recipients of that water will be financially beneficial to us.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And just being good stewards of the water resource that we have.
And I agree with Mr. Unger that while on the face of it currently, the solar investment that we made is not netting us a savings. Going forward, it will net us a savings. And I think that it makes an excellent social statement for sustainability and just being good stewards of the earth. So I'm really glad that we went forward with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Roger. Mr. Unger, and then Mr. Buckman.
Sure. I'm thinking about Laguna, and I'm glad you mentioned the recycled water at Laguna. This just goes to show that it's not necessarily cheaper, but again, I think it's the right thing to do to reuse that water. And
so it'll be a water as needed basis. We're starting to roll that out district wide. In fact, right now Baywood is fully online. It's connected to the network, and Mr. Salachi can turn it on from his living room or turn it off from his living room, and it gives him notices if it's on and it shouldn't be. But as we start to roll out, and the Wi-Fi at each of the campuses has helped that process, will help that process immensely in terms of getting data to those control systems, specifically water. But that will also start to allow us to set up control systems for our lighting, our HVAC, and other systems within our buildings so that we can control those from the luxury of our own living rooms, as I like to say. But have notice, it has feedback from the sites when things are on and they shouldn't be.
You know, that's great, and that's not something I would have thought about as an ancillary advantage to the Wi-Fi systems, but I think it's great that you guys are doing that. I mean, God knows that, you know, what is it, the Nest home, you know, your
we
home.
We have one in our
stat.
Office we're testing right now.
Right. So I think this is great. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Buckman.
Just real quickly, as you were talking about Laguna Middle School just now, you were talking about some, what I would use the word, infrastructure problems. And are those numbers actually showing up here? Is that what you're saying?
I don't think it's, again, the big incident that we had, and again, I don't know how long, that could have been leaking for 2 years. You know, it could have been leaking for 2 years. It finally reared its head about a week before Rick Vanderscheid retired. So it was one of the last things he got to do. But again, I don't know. It probably speaks to a portion of that disproportionate cost within there, but I know that we've had issues out there, and so that anecdotally that tells me that this data, now that we have this compiled, it's believable. You know, I wouldn't look at that and say, oh no, the meter's wrong. I would say, yeah, we've had some issues, so this is a believable data, and we could be using that much water.
This is post correction data.
This is right in the middle of the correction.
Okay.
So,
and then just the last question. I went to a green school conference where they did talk about the waterless urinals, and they did smell pretty good. But there was also a lot of technology there about hot water heaters.
Yes.
And I don't know if you've thought about that, but and whether the data is still available. But it really was kind of interesting. I mean, they're just really improved. So, thank you very much.
So, just as an end note, I think, you know, as we talked, all of these questions that the board has, they're the same ones I had. And it's, you know, we need a system that monitors this in a better way. I mean, we were kind of, you know, it's kind of like we were collecting data, but what was the purpose of collecting the data? What was the specific reason for it? And so, that's what I'm doing now. Narrowing it down by meter, by site, by company. You know, what are the costs that we have? You know, if all of a sudden I get a bill that's $1,000 more than the month before or the year prior, then now I'll be able to tell that I got a leak. Anthony, we better get out to that site and check it out. You know, that's why that monitoring aspect is so important. And so I'm hopeful that that is kind of a start for us. Again, I'm going to be coming back to you with kind of more information, more data, explaining some of these, you know, unit costs, those types of things in the future. So that's why we put part one, and there might be part five and six and seven.
That's great.
And
Jim, one more.
Those
comment?
Types of things.
Oh. Mrs. Sheffer, and then we'll come back to you, Mr. Buckley.
Thank you.
I just wanted to point out quickly that if, as we all hope, Measure D passes tonight, that there will be an impact on water usage when we have pools. And I know we can't really project that out, but it's just sort of a reality check in this this time of water conservation and paying attention to the cost, that if it is determined that there will be pools at the high schools, that will have an impact.
Yeah, and that's going to be, you know, there's obviously the one-time hit when we fill it, you know. But there's, you know, we've got to be good stewards of those pools once they are put in place, you know, make sure that they're staying covered, make sure that the systems are operating properly, make sure that we're doing everything we can to conserve that water, you know, and be good stewards of it once and the energy as well. Yeah, I mean, they are going to be a huge energy consumer as well. So is there ways we can offset that with additional solar, with solar heating, with, you know, the one benefit we have, like at Morro Bay, is we have real estate out there. You know, so can we go to hydroponic or hydronic solar heating systems, those types of systems to kind of minimize that gas usage? You know, so there, yeah, we need to be very cognizant of that.
Mr. Buckman.
And if I may, and Chris brought this up for, I can't remember which issue it was last week, about possibly working something into the STEAM program. The Environmental Protection Agency has...
Tonight, Jennifer O'Hagan and I would like to present to you an update on Google Apps for Education, known as GAFE, affectionately called the Google, and also a quick update on websites. So we'd just like to give a big thank you to the IS&T department, who has really done a great job of helping to roll out both of these Google and websites, and have been really supportive, and especially to Jen O'Hagan for her work with Google. It's been great. So we're going to start with Google. Just a little reminder, kind of the timeline. Last year we announced that we would be changing from GroupWise to Google and created accounts this summer, and now we're beginning that implementation. Our presentation tonight is going to cover five different things. So we're going to look at how Google is being used, why we moved to Google, and what it can do to help our students and our staff. The third is how Google is being utilized within San Luis Coastal, what we're going to do to support teachers and staff with the transition, and then also where we can go next. And we'll take a quick look at our website completion at the end of that. So Google Apps for Education, I thought we would look at usage. So this includes staff, also substitute teachers, student teachers, that type of thing, and students as well. So we've created about 9,000 total accounts within Google. You look at Gmail, that is the biggest use of it currently at this time. So we have about 181,000 messages that have happened just in the first 50 days of school, so used heavily. Also, documents is what we looked at. We have about 47,000 documents that have been created. It's pretty incredible. So one of the huge benefits of Google is that you can have a shared document, right? So that gives you a collaborative opportunity for multiple people to work on one document from different locations. You think about the student impact of that, as well as how that can help teachers, administrators, have multiple people giving input on one document. No more of the attach this, I'll send it to you, wait for you to give me something back, get something else from you, try to figure out how to get that all molded together, right? So now it's one shared document that we can work on together, which that is, just at a basic level, one of the really good benefits that we saw of why we could go to a new email system that is a free email account, but yet has a lot of instructional benefit for both efficiency for teachers and instructional benefit for students. We look at Sheets, which is kind of a simple Google format of PowerPoint, and so we have about 3,000 to 4,000 of those that have already been created.
We have forms, which our data is showing us is the least used, and so interestingly enough, we're able to use this data to let Jen inform professional development as well, right? It shows us that if that's not highly used, that might be something we want to give teachers more information about and let them see how that can help them as well. In Calendar, about 9,000 calendars have been created. Also, another shared feature in that you can create a calendar, share it with others so that people can see, can apply that to their own calendar, and also can see how to incorporate calendars and work together. A really great efficiency use there as well. Google Apps. So this is interesting. You look at the overall usage. So it starts there with forms. The interesting thing to note is although forms is our least used app within Google currently, you can see it is even increasing though, even though it is our least used at this time. Next is Sheets. So again, you can see since school has started how that the use has increased, as well as Slides, which is like PowerPoint version, and you can see a pattern here that all are being utilized more heavily over time. Calendar, you can see a dramatic increase there, and then kind of off the charts literally, we had Google Docs as being a heavy usage there. So this is not just interesting information, but also helps drive what we can do for professional development for teachers and what next steps help them to take it to another level.
Quick question.
Just some more interesting stats I wanted to share with you is we have about an average of a little over 2,000 logins to Google Apps each day. Yes?
Kim, we have a question from Mr. Millar.
Please.
I just wanted to know about Sheets and Slides and Forms. Do they form a library where other folks are maybe putting together a PowerPoint presentation on a similar subject can go in and look at the library of pages or slides?
Right, great point.
Incorporate them?
Yeah, absolutely.
My Google Calendar has changed my life. It's for the better.
Great points. Next is, this is an interesting piece of data that we've noticed that about 500 or 600 students logins on Saturdays and Sundays. So it's one of those things that you kind of hope that this allows for an extended way for students to learn and for them to be so interested and engaged and motivated that they want to go look at those things at other times. I was just at a training with Mr. Jarvis, and he was mentioning that he was posting an assignment, and students were getting in there before he was even wanting them in there and saying, hey, Mr. Jarvis, I haven't even seen instruction on this yet. And he was like, whoa, hold on, we're not there yet. So they're checking it and interested and fascinated by it at times outside of just the walls of the school. Approximately 100 new apps are created each day, so you can see people are starting to dive in, as well about 9,000 active Google users, about 5,000 are using Google Docs. So you can see it's one of the big pieces there. Just a quick look at some of the things what Google Apps can do for us. You look at the ability to help us with collaboration. So not only between students, but between teachers. Mr. Millar's example is a great example there of how students can work together, teachers can work together, and mix that for that benefit. Communication. There's Google websites that have been incorporated into our school websites that I'd like to show you here in a minute, as well as Gmail. All of these sharing opportunities really allow for communication in a really modern and progressive way that creates efficiency. Access to Google Classroom and efficiency, like I just mentioned. So this allows for teachers to have access to Google Classroom, which is an electronic digital way for students and teachers to turn in assignments, to get immediate feedback, and to get information back. So this is really kind of a next step. So only a few teachers we see right now utilizing this, but could really be a neat way to help with efficient paperless information going back and forth. Distance learning. It's an exciting piece. We think about Google Hangouts that we have for adults right now, which gives teachers the opportunity to perhaps see a museum tour, in New York right from their classroom. So it really allows a opportunity to open up, around the nation, around the world, a lot of opportunities that virtual field trips and tours and things that would really open students' eyes. So neat opportunities there. feedback, seeing a lot of great examples of students turning in work, and teachers are able to comment and give suggestions immediately, right on that, even while students are working, be able to give it back, have a back and forth feedback with students. A teacher the other day was saying that they used to feel guilty being at their computer, and now they see that there's times when they can sit there and be giving immediate feedback, and the student is sitting there working on something, and the teacher's able to see what they're working on in the moment, give them feedback right in that moment, so that you can give individual instruction to what a student needs right there. So really great use of that. You know, it prepares students for the world that they're walking into and starts to get them ready for the college and career readiness skills that they're going to need. And of course, speaking of conservation, going a little greener would be good. So next we have a 2-minute video that we have some teachers going to talk to you about, kind of just in the first 50 days of school, how Google has benefited them and how it's helped them out with instruction.
We'd have a variety of workshops during the professional development day back in August. These workshops were differentiated and allowed teachers and staff a choice of presentations based on the content as well as the level. So we had some beginning workshops, intermediate workshops, and advanced workshops that covered different topics related to Google. We also had a workshop day for classified staff that Kristen facilitated, and that was run the same way, same sort of structure, offering choices, much like an educational conference that you might attend. So we had a lot of positive feedback for that style. In addition, I was doing after-school workshops up here in the computer lab, and I had several teachers and staff attend over the last couple of months. And we are also starting to have Google tips available at principals' meetings, so some support there at the top level. And then at the site level, during TCT meetings, TCT times, sometimes we'll provide support through our EdTech lead teachers. They meet with me every other month, and we become experts on a topic related to Google, and then we go back and share that out at our sites. Staff meetings are another forum for giving support to our teachers. Optional after-school workshops at the site as well, so we're beginning that implementation as well. Library techs are also included in the training to provide site support. I'm also attending secretary meetings with Amy for the elementary secretaries and giving them some Google support as well. And I'm also tailoring after-school training just to meet the needs of the different sites. One example that I'm really looking forward to in the next couple of months is I'm going to be going into classrooms and actually teaching students how to create electronic portfolios using Google Sites. So I'm really excited about that. And then the last layer of our support model is more community-based. So our adult school has been offering Google classes at a discounted rate to our SLCUSD staff and employees. County Office of Education also has workshops, and we've been sending ed tech lead teachers and other lead teachers, and those workshops are facilitated by Google certified trainers, and so those have been very valuable. Teachers and principals are also attending professional conferences such as Q. And then I'm looking forward to the Google Summit. That's going to be held up in Templeton this spring. And that's put on by an ed tech team, and they're a global network of educational technologists. So I'd like to share with you what the teachers were saying about our Google professional development. We value their feedback, and I wanted to share with you some comments that they left on the feedback forms that we provided right after the professional development day last August. So here's a photo of one of our professional development days, and they said, excellent information, good practice and ideas for the coming year, great workshop, lots of usable info, I learned how to use the calendar feature, highly practical and informative, very useful and clear, I set up my course website, good info at just the right pace to allow understanding and exploration, lots of good information. It will be great to have another Google training. So we're excited to be continually providing support as needed. So on the next slide, you're going to hear a sampling from a few teachers and staff, how they are using the different features of Google Apps and how it has impacted their working environment. So let's hope we have sound.
Hi, I use Google Classroom as a way for my students to access assignments. Then they have the ability to see it at home or when we're at school on the Chromebooks. They can also send something right back to me, so grading is easier and they have accessibility everywhere they are.
I love everything Google. I'm using Sites, Drive, Forms. Right here I've got a site where I've got a form embedded. It makes everything I do easier. All the clubs, all the classes, just organization, everything so seamlessly integrated. It's changed how I teach for the better.
I love Google Calendar because I can share my calendar with others in my department, and it makes scheduling appointments and events a lot more efficient.
I'm using Google Forms for summative assessment, and it is saving me an abundance of time, allowing for more instruction and more collaboration with my students.
Having students work on group projects, they'll come into the library as a class. One student will create a Google Slides or Google presentation, and then they'll share it with the other members of their team. And what that allows them to do is all be working, maybe even sitting across the room from each other, but all be working on a presentation at the same time and have a really nice seamless presentation together.
This year, and I really like the ease of communicating and collaborating with everybody across the district and being able to work from home and just a lot of access for our parents to be able to see what's going on.
The best thing about Google Docs that I've used is their feedback feature. So you can leave comments on their paper, you can leave suggestions, or just straight edit their paper. We're looking at a response that I'm
used to do with paper and pencil. Now I'm going to choose to do them electronically. Totally fine, but we're working with teachers on how do you continue to move that up, this model. So for just a quick example is, for example, if students used to turn in a writing assignment on paper, now they type it and share it with the teacher, right? So that would be a substitution type of level. Augmentation, if you think about students used to turn in a writing assignment on paper, now they type it, turn it in electronically, get feedback from their teacher, and other students on this shared document, right? That's kind of moved it up to an augmentation level. The next would be a modification level. So for a writing assignment, students can research online, use embedded tools within Google to create footnotes and bibliographies, type it, turn it in electronically, get editing and revision notes from their teachers, even from other students while they're writing, turn it in, get more feedback on a shared document. Then if you think about what does that look like at redefinition level, you have a writing assignment. And students conduct online interviews with other students and professionals around the world. They take virtual tours and field trips. They embed video clips and multimedia presentations. They use embedded footnotes and bibliographies in their assignment. Type it, turn it in electronically, and get editing and revision notes from other students and their teachers on this elaborate presentation. The sky's the limit. We're excited to think about where it can go and what it's going to allow us to do in just a change of an email system. So exciting to think about. Just a quick update. As you know, we started last year on updating our websites, and kind of we came with these four
focus areas here. We wanted to look at communication. So we were looking at how can we create a more modern way to communicate that kind of coordinates also with mobile devices, so when someone's looking up the website on their phone, and encourages sites to use this tool for all stakeholders, so that it's a tool for parents, it's a tool for people moving into the area, and it gives the vision of what we want our district and our school system to be portrayed as. The second was accessibility. We wanted all stakeholders, and especially parents, to be able to get quick information, to know what's going on at their school and in their students' classroom. Consistency. We were looking for some consistency so you can tell we're all part of the same family. And relevance. So we wanted, you know, up-to-date communication tool that kind of gave the same tone that we wanted for our district. So this is what our site used to look like. And then, Kim, if you could click there for me on the new website. Always got to be a delay in a technology presentation, right? It's part of. There we go. Poof. So here's our district website. And Kim, if you can click on schools and let's pick the first one, Baywood, there. So you'll start to see that there's a consistency that has been created. And I just want to show you a couple of features that I think are really neat. First, across all elementary sites, you'll find this same format. So everyone has the same buttons along the top, has the same buttons along the side, has the same three you know, chunks there along the bottom. And that was created with a really collaborative effort with iTech, getting feedback, trying one thing, bringing it back and forth and back and forth so that everyone felt satisfied with it at the end. I want to just show the Twitter feed over there to the left. This is a really neat feature that has created that feed directly from the Twitter feed that the principal has, and then they've connected this with their website so that every time they're updating their Twitter feed, it's going automatically to their website. The other thing is over here on upcoming events to the right, this is a Google feed from their Google Calendar. So they've embedded that feed so that anytime the site secretary or principal or whoever's in charge of the site of handling their Google calendar for their school site, it automatically updates it here onto this information in a kind of narrative form here to the right, and then also calendar at the top gives an embedded, you know, typical looking calendar straight from the Google Calendar. So as soon as they update it at their desktop, it's coordinated with this and updates it here. So not only is it, we think, provided those four accomplishments we are looking for, it really has these features that allow for efficiency and for a principal to, or secretary to only do something in one place and not have to keep going back. So if you want to go back, Kim, select a middle school. You'll see kind of the same pattern. The only thing we changed with the middle school is just the calendar there in the center, as middle schools and high schools tend to get heavy in activities, and so that had that on the forefront. But otherwise, you can tell it's still along the same lines and the same pattern. If you want to choose Morro Bay next, Kim. Again, you can find kind of the same pattern.
Legally, we have to do this every even year review, so this will get us back on schedule and submit this to the County Board of Supervisors because they have to approve it before it goes into effect.
Mrs. Roger.
Are you looking for an approval, Mrs. Holmes?
Yes, please. I would like a motion.
Okay, I'll move approval of the Conflict of Interest Code as amended.
So we have a motion by Mrs. Roger and a second by Mr. Millar. Is there any further discussion? Comments? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Sorry, we didn't go to the public on that, but I'm not sure we needed to. But anyway. All right, we are at the action consent agenda. And as I read these off, you can let us know which ones you want pulled. Item 8.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Item 8.02, acceptance of donations.
Pull, please.
Okay. 8.03, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 8.04, approval of warrants and payroll. 8.05, appointment to the San Luis Obispo SELPA Community Advisory Committee. So we have a request to pull 8.02. We need a motion on the other items.
I'll move approval of item 8.01 and 8.03 through 8.05.
I'll second.
So we have a motion by Mr. Unger and a second by Mrs. Sheffer. Is there any further discussion? Is there any public comment? Seeing none, I'll call for the question or the vote. All in favor of the acceptance of those, the approval?
Aye.
Aye. Anybody abstaining or disagreeing? Okay, 7-0, passes 7-0. Mrs. Roger, acceptance of donations.
Thank you. I just wanted to make note of, unless this is a typo, an $8,000 donation to Morobe High School from someone who obviously didn't feel they needed personal recognition because it's noted as an anonymous donor. So I know it'll be put to good use, and we're very appreciative. That's a really significant donation, and I thank the person or couple or family that did that. And that said, I'll move approval of item 8.02.
And I'll second that. So we have a motion for approval of item 8.02. Is there any discussion? Any public comment? Okay. All in favor of acceptance? Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Carries 7-0. So we are now on the advanced agenda. Anything for the advanced agenda? Seeing none. Okay. Board reports. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
Mr. Unger and I were able to do the board walk a few weeks ago, at Las Osas Middle School, and that was tremendously informative and eye-opening and actually just totally blew me away, actually, to tell you the truth. And one of the things I just want to focus on is relevant to Redbird and the work that they're doing there. So Amy Burris, who was prepping for a class, her math class, she actually had that time off to prep, but she took her time to talk to us about what she and the others are doing in the sixth grade STEAM classroom program. And I couldn't help but think about that tonight when we were talking about Redbird. She uses something similar, but it's called Buzz Math, I believe. And she does a kind of flipped classroom scenario where I couldn't help but think when the teachers were talking earlier about the amount of time and preparation and work that they have to do, that if we could just get to that place where we could be doing these flipped classrooms and using this technology, it will actually free them to do the kind of work that they want to do with these students. And I know it's hard getting there, but we actually saw it in practice in Amy's classroom, and that was incredible. And the other thing that they were doing that was very interesting was she mentioned that each of the sixth grade classroom teachers have, in a sense, become single subject teachers. And so they can go deep in the subject that they're offering to their students. And so the students go from, in this particular day, they were working on a presentation, and they each went about it a different way. They had designed something that they were going to make a commercial about in one classroom, make a radio announcement in another, and each teacher had taken that piece of it, and they were able to go deep, and they were able to spend time with their students. And it was I hadn't heard of the idea of doing single subject teaching in elementary school until it was brought up tonight, but I